Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, you can go to www.mecu.com. Remember, it is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, mecu.com. Well, Valerie Lenz, welcome. Have a seat, and we'll...
Well, thank you, Mark. It's a...
Let me just get you set up, and there's your microphone and your headphones, and we'll jump into this. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure seeing you again.
It's good to see you again, too. I would say that when the debate started around gambling in Maryland, Valerie Lenz was a guest on the show very early on in the 90s when we first started talking about this. And because people were really, back then, at least when we began to argue it, were talking about the issue of addiction in gambling, which doesn't seem to happen as much now. I mean, I haven't heard peep one about the issue of addiction in all these debates about gambling.
Well, I totally agree with you. Typically what the casino industry says, we're going to bring in money, we're going to bring in jobs, it's good for the state, we're going to support education, but no one talks about compulsive gambling. And let me be very clear, I am not at all opposed to gambling, but my concern is gambling addiction. And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of that.
410-319-8888. We'll come to your calls as soon as we can get you in here. I know you're calling in, but let me just say, Valerie, you came on the show first. In a debate with Kurt Anderson, who was then a delegate, still is a delegate, May 25th, 1993, is when you first had this first conversation about gambling and addiction on this program.
We were young then, weren't we?
But so let's talk about that, though. I mean, because one of the issues are people bring up a lot, whether they're in the gambling industry or not, in casino industry, it has to do with, I mean, the personal choice. So I'm saying the people – so if some people are – addicted to gambling, why does that have to affect how and why should that affect the debate on whether or not we should have gambling in Maryland?
Well, the substance that is abused in gambling is money. And we all need money. When you walk down the street, you have money or credit card in your pocket. Gambling is all about money. Now, when someone is an addict, especially a gambler, they can't simply stop because they've run out of money. So they will start stealing. The crime rate just totally escalates.
Talk a bit more about that. What do you mean the crime rate escalates? What?
There will be primarily financial crimes, writing bad checks, stealing from neighbors, stealing from the family, selling a family's values, selling all of their properties and possessions, eventually getting loans, small loans, then bank loans, and putting their second mortgage. Whatever they can do to get money to support their addiction. And like I said, when they run out of that legal access, they will commit crimes. Most of the crimes in the past have been nonviolent crimes. However, with this vast increase of legalized gambling, especially the slot machines, we're seeing a whole different population of compulsive gamblers. And unfortunately, some of those will also commit violent crimes, whether it's selling drugs, breaking and entering. These are crimes that we're seeing now.
But when you – I know you've done a lot of studies on this. I'm just curious what – I mean, people say that when you talk about people who have gambling addictions, problem with gambling, that we're talking about 2 or 3% of the population who gamble at all. Now, is that –
well, you take 2 or 3% of what? How many hundred million of our population? That comes to a sizable figure. The industry will say, oh, well, it's – less than 1%, maybe a low figure of 1 million or 3 million. The other end, the clinicians and the addicts, the Gamblers Anonymous and the researchers will say, oh, no, it's closer to 10 million. Now, one of the difficulties in doing research is that many of these research studies have been done by telephone. Now, let's say, Mark, you pick up the phone, you answer it, and someone says, oh, we're doing research on gambling. Have you done this? Have you done that? Have you stolen any money? Have you committed any crimes? Of course, your answer is going to be no.
Right.
So even any of those research studies that are done by telephone, and that's unfortunately the way they have to be done, those figures are going to be low. So it doesn't matter what the industry says. I don't buy it.
Well, now, what do you see? You don't just write and talk about gambling addiction. I mean, you treat people. You're a therapist.
Gambling, oh, while you mentioned, let me make a correction. You described me as a clinical psychologist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a clinical counselor, mental health counselor.
I understand the
slightly
difference.
Slight distinction. What we see when a compulsive gambler finally comes into Gamblers Anonymous or into professional treatment, they're virtually unable to function. They're so depressed. They can't walk. They can't eat. They can't function. In the meantime, the whole family has been affected by it as well. Constant battles over money. Where is the money? No money for food, no money for school children. The health is affected. Very often the gambler loses his job, her job, and we're seeing many more female compulsive gamblers now. There is co-addiction, cross-addiction. We're seeing more alcoholism. So the whole spectrum has increased in terms of danger and problems.
Why is it, do you think, that we have not seen? I mean, when we first had these conversations in 1993 and had many of them, as we were talking about, the beginning of the slots debate took place.
Oh, yes.
Remember? That was the beginning of this conversation in Maryland, the slots debate. Do we reinstitute slots in Maryland? There was a lot of discussion around the question of gambling and of addiction to gambling. But that doesn't seem to be taking place. I mean, what do you think is happening? You don't see the articles about it. You don't see the cry that we have to set aside $4, $5, $10 million out of this money for that we make on gambling. The state makes aside for addiction treatment. We don't see that.
Well, the legislation that was passed did allow for funds for compulsive gambling treatment, prevention, a hotline, all of those things. I haven't seen it. I have not seen it. I have not seen a single number for a compulsive gambling hotline. I have not seen a single treatment program for compulsive gambling, and yet the money's there. Who is spending it?
Wait a minute. When the slots bill was passed, it was supposed to be, I forget what the number was, X amount of dollars, $3 million or something, set aside for a hotline and for people to get help with gambling addiction.
Correct.
Correct? And you're saying that's never occurred?
I haven't seen it. Have you driven along the highway and seen a billboard? If you have a gambling problem, call this number. There is a hotline number that the Department of Health is funding, $54,000, I think it is, which is doesn't even pay a salary. But that hotline is not answered by anyone in Maryland. It is answered by someone in Delaware. Now, what do people in Delaware know about what's happening here in Baltimore, in Annapolis, and in Maryland? And then invariably the referral is to Gamblers Anonymous. Well, I'm sorry. Gamblers Anonymous is a wonderful organization. I support it 100%.
But
many people also need professional counseling. And the compulsive gamblers that come in the severe state of depression, to come to a Gamblers Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous meeting one day a week just isn't enough. You know, the suicide rate will increase.
So what is it you think that, given that the chances of stopping gambling, and some people think you should stop gambling, most do not, but given that you probably will not stop gambling, and we're talking now about the expansion of gambling into casinos and maybe a sixth site at the National Harbor, which will be debated over the next few days starting Thursday in Annapolis in the special session, what is it when we talk to our delegates and senators tomorrow and Thursday and Friday on this program that we should be talking about in terms of gambling and addiction and what needs to be understood and included in this discussion in these bills?
Well, Mark, it isn't just gambling and addiction. It's the whole spectrum. It is not just how much money the casinos are going to give to the state legislature, but what are they not doing? You know, they promise so many jobs. I was at the casino in White Marsh the other day.
White Marsh or Anne Arundel County?
Anne Arundel County.
Arundel Mills.
Yes. Right. Sorry about that. Very different.
The Cordish Casino, yeah.
And, you know, we say in Maryland, we do not have table games. Well, that is an out and outright deception. You go into the casino. It's not just the slots, but they have electronic slots. You can go to the bar, and there'll be the slots game right on the bar. Well, in Anne Arundel, the blackjack tables, the poker tables, the craps tables, they're all electronic. You don't even need a dealer or a croupier. It's all electronic. So the industry will say, oh, well, we're going to bring in 1,000 jobs or so. I'd like to see the figures. I'd like to see the people. They're not there.
So, yeah, I mean, the idea here is, I guess the game's there now because the table games haven't become legal yet. They're about to become legal with this new bill, correct?
They're not legal, but they're already there. Again, that's one of the deceptions. And I don't think these legislators really have gone there to see what's happening.
So what you're saying is that when we talk about having table games, which you think of as, which is what they'll be debating, we're talking about table games with, we think of dealers, blackjack dealers and roulette wheel dealers and
exactly.
People have a job, union jobs. You're saying right now those things exist, but they're not people running the games. These are electronic variations of those games.
Yeah, variations of the three cherry slot machine. But the games are there. $5, you play a game of blackjack. You just feed in the money. Or the electronic card. It makes it even easier and faster.
Well, I'm going to talk more about that when we come back. We have to take a very brief break, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Valerie Lenz, a clinical counselor who studied compulsive gambling, is writing 3 books on compulsive gambling, and we'll talk about this book she's writing as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are here with Dr. Valerie Lorenz, a clinical counselor who has studied compulsive gambling, is writing 3 books on compulsive gambling, has been working, has been a guest on this show many times over the last 20 years as we wrestle with the issue. People seem not to be wrestling with the issue of addiction and compulsive gambling at all in this round of debates, so we are bringing it to the airwaves. We're also joined right now by Christine Riley, who joins us by phone. We have our fingers crossed. Senior researcher at the National Center for Responsible Gaming. And Christine, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Aha!
Hello, Christine.
Thank you.
Hello.
The gods are with us, at least for the second part of our show. It wasn't working in the first part of our show, but there you are. And the lines are open, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this. Clarence in Baltimore, you are the first caller up. We're going to come to your call in just a minute. 410-319-8888. And looking at this issue of gambling and addiction, this is something I've been reading, what you've been writing as well, Christine. And you, this apparently, I mean, it seems to me from what I've read that you've written, question whether or not there really is such a thing as addiction to gambling.
Oh, there definitely is an addiction to gambling. And gambling disorders affect approximately 1% of the general population, adult population. And it is definitely a devastating disorder for those who have it. And I don't think that anyone in the field questions whether or not. Now, sometimes it can be an expression of another disorder. For example, if someone has a bipolar disorder, they may gamble excessively during a manic phase, and therefore the gambling addiction is not the primary diagnosis. But nonetheless, whether it's the primary or secondary, it's still a devastating illness that needs to be addressed.
Now, one of the things you were talking about earlier, Valerie, before we got our phones working right and get Christine on the show here, and I apologize for that, was that you think the numbers are quite a bit higher. I mean, there was an Ontario report that I read before we went to the show that said between 2-3%. Other reports have said less and more. So what is your take?
Well, you know, Mark, I don't want to say it doesn't matter because it certainly does matter, but research studies cannot be accurate if those studies are done by way of telephone. No one who is asked by the strange voice, have you ever committed a crime or have you ever done something you normally would not do, not knowing who the other person is. It might be a detective because the gambler just committed a crime. Money is the substance of this addiction. And when the gamblers run out of money, they will commit crimes. That's the bottom line. And no, we don't talk about it. We talk only in terms of, oh, we're bringing in jobs, we're bringing in money, it'll save the horse racing industry, we're going to save Atlantic City. And none of that has been true. It's been grossly exaggerated.
Mark, I think it's important to remember that the most important landmark study on mental health in America is the National Comorbidity Survey, which is not done by telephone. It's done with in-person interviews, 10,000 Americans, representative of the population. And that's the study that found less than 1% have a pathological gambling disorder. Roughly 2% have some problems with their gambling but don't meet diagnostic criteria. So I do think that that's probably the definitive study. And, yes, there are problems with telephone surveys, but this one did not use a telephone survey.
Well, the other factor there is, where are these studies being done? Are they being done in a city or in a state that has very little gambling, or is it done in Atlantic City?
Yeah, and it was funded by the National Institute of Mental Health, which is one of the federal agencies. And it was done by one of the leading, probably the leading scholar in this area, which is Ron Kessler at Harvard University.
I mean, one of the things, again, that we've read, whatever the number is, 1% or 2 to 5%, as some other studies have talked about, in terms of people who gamble socially but obsessively, that number is still a huge number and growing all the time. It's when you look at what happens in Maryland and other places where video games are taking place, I mean, that's what we're talking about, even more so than we are at the high-end games. And we're talking about what affects working class, middle class people in America, and that when we open all these casinos, I think that is kind of often given a kind of short shrift in our conversations about what we have to consider once we allow gambling. You want to start off with Valerie, then we'll go over to Christine.
The problem is, first of all, it's not just low-income people who play the slots. It's across the board now. I mean, I've seen people who've lost their business as a result of gambling on slots. And I've certainly seen the crimes that they've committed. Slots, in my opinion, are the most addictive. It's a one-on-one game. You're not distracted by other people at a blackjack table or at a craps table. You're there all by yourself, two or three machines at a time, and you play and play and play until you run out of money.
Christine?
There's no evidence yet that any one particular form of gaming is more addictive than others. It's people get into trouble with all kinds of gambling, racetrack gambling, bingo, lottery tickets, machines. It runs the whole gamut. So we don't have any research yet to prove that some are more difficult than others. The other issue, though, is that most clinicians and serious scientists in the field really now view addiction as a relationship between the person and the object of addiction. And the person is usually very vulnerable, and they bring certain vulnerabilities to this, and they develop a relationship with the drink or the cigarette or the gambling activity, and it becomes meaningful to them, and then they have trouble stopping. And so I think it's important to always view things as addiction as a relationship, because we don't really have any evidence yet. I mean, if, as Howard Schaefer says at Harvard, if slot machines were more addictive than other forms of gambling, then what about all the people who use them? I mean, then we would have more than 1% of the population being addicted. It's the same on the Internet and so on. We don't see the rates. So I do think that you have to remember that someone has to bring some vulnerabilities to it in order to get caught up in it and get into trouble.
Well, I totally agree with that, the vulnerability aspect. Certainly we see that with alcoholism, with drug addiction, with other addictions, and obviously also with gambling. But do we need 15,000 slot machines in Maryland? We don't have 15,000 bartenders in Maryland. So why have so much why have people so exposed to pervasive gambling? And it's not just slots. It's also the lottery. And actually, quite frankly, I'm curious as to what this will do to state lotteries. If we bring in another casino at the National Harbor with I don't know how many slots and other types of games, and now there's also talk about Internet gambling, what does that do to lottery funds?
Let me open the phone. Mark, go ahead, Christine.
Well, there are some scientists at Harvard who have been studying two of these issues, the adaptation issue, the exposure issue, as well as the internet. On exposure, we had very little gambling was mainly in the late 70s confined to, let's say, Nevada, and then, of course, Atlantic City comes along. And you had, in 1977, a survey that said that less than 1% of the population had a gambling problem. Well, that rate really hasn't changed in spite of the incredible expansion of gambling in all of the states. I think there are only two states left that don't have any form of legal gambling. And so that indicates that probably the populations are adapting to the presence of these new gambling opportunities. Howard Schaefer at Harvard has done extensive research on this. He thinks that in the beginning there probably is a novelty effect, and you might get some more people gambling than they did before, and some of them might get into trouble, and I do think the public health planners need to keep an eye on that. But over time, it looks as though the populations adapt. I mean, Nevada has the same prevalence rate as the rest of the country, and that's one of the most exposed, one of the places that's most exposed to gambling. The other issue is the internet, and I agree it's a frontier. We don't know a lot. Most of the research, the serious research that's being done, is by Harvard. They're looking at the actual betting transactions of internet gamblers who use bwin, which is a European company. Now, granted, we don't know what the applicability is to America because these are all mainly European and Asian customers, but they're having trouble finding higher rates of problem gambling, and they have access to all the actual transactions. So far it's not clear that that's going to be a problem.
Well, I have some issues raised around that as well, but I want to hear what Valerie said, and then I need to get to the phones here. Valerie, do you want to comment again before we went to the phones?
I believe exposure absolutely is a contributing factor to developing gambling and compulsive gambling. I have no problem with social gambling, with heavy social gambling. But when we come to problem gambling, which is still on the cusp, you can go one way or the other, now we're on alert, and certainly we have the problem of compulsive gambling. My problem is not much has been done to prevent it or to treat it.
Let me open the phone. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888, Dr. Valerie Lorenz and Dr. Christine Riley with us, and Clarence in Baltimore, you're on the air, 410-319-8888. Welcome, Clarence.
Good evening to you and your guests. I believe maybe 5 or 6 years ago there was a study done by some clinical researchers where they did a study on gambling, and they showed that the thing that drives people to put coin after coin in the gambling machine in the one-armed bandits is that the anticipation of winning is what. And the increased brain activity, which produces the, I believe they call it dopamine, which is like the body's own natural form of heroin, increases. Just the pleasure that is anticipated of winning is what drives a lot of people to do this. And in that being the case, if that is the case, I believe it was on Diane Reeves, and I would say that these were credible people, because I believe Ms. Reeves runs a very credible show. So that being the case, that would say that even I, who does not gamble, could probably walk into a gambling casino and at any given point in time become susceptible because of what's happening chemically in my brain, if I'm susceptible to that. And one thing I do remember about that show that I was listening to is he was making the comparison between a heroin addict and a gambler. He said the heroin addict is much better off because all he's going to do is go out and spend X amount of dollars to cure his illness, where the compulsive gambler, because of the increased brain activity, has no defense. He's just going to keep going, going, and going. So are any of your guests, Mark, Mr. Steiner, aware of such a study being done, or do they know of exactly what I've just mentioned? Thanks, guys.
There are at least 3 or 4 studies. We can talk about some of them. I've not read them all, but I've read 4 of the abstracts over the last several days of 4 different studies. And they all say something very different things, especially an interesting one about how this is being used to treat patients with Parkinson's, to release dopamine in the brain by having them gamble. So I'm curious. This is an issue. I think that people, addiction counselors would say that gambling or drinking or being overly sexualized or whatever that is, are all very similar.
I agree.
In terms of what drives people to do them, the pleasure that drives people to them, and then the being stuck in it, an addiction that you can't get out of once it starts becoming having a negative influence on your existence.
I believe that pleasure is more in the beginning with the social gamblers, no question about it. But when you get to the point of addiction, it's not so much the excitement, it's the escape. It's the numbing out. The alcoholic wants to numb out. The drug addict wants to numb out. The gambler, the action gambler is what we call it now, typically your casino gambler, originally, sure, they go for the money, for the win. However, when they're so addicted to the point that they get desperate and start stealing or thinking about suicide, it's not the win. It's just the money to keep on gambling, to continue to escape into what they call the zone, spacing out. The same thing with the slots addicts that we're seeing now. It's not the action and excitement. It's just the escape. The slots addicts they describe their feelings as being sucked into the machine, like being in a hypnotic trance, which is kind of a variation of the dissociate state that we see with the casino gamblers.
Christine, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, the National Center for Responsible Gaming funded the study that the caller mentioned. It was at Massachusetts General Hospital, and they basically had people, normal subjects, not people with problems, do a gambling task, and they watched the brain activity through an fMRI, and they discovered that it was the same neural pathways that get lit up when anticipating a hit of cocaine and the same neural pathways light up when you're anticipating winning money. Now, this is with normal subjects, and this simply proves, the most important thing it proves is that there's probably more of an addiction syndrome going on where people have, for some reason or other, a deficient reward system that keeps them from the neurotransmitters that keep most of us on an even keel and in a good mood, that for some reason these people have problems with their brain chemicals, and if the gambling or the drug or the makes them feel better and stimulates those areas, obviously there's a reward going on, and that will obviously lead someone who's very vulnerable to want to do it again. But the point is that you have to have the deficiency to begin with to get into trouble, because over 80% of the American public gambles, and most of them do not have a problem.
Well, I've heard people argue on this program and other places the way we define addiction, whether it's gambling or anything else, is a very kind of it can be very dicey, can be very questionable. I mean, that you hear well. Let's take the lottery. The lottery, you know, there's the making the connection between class and poverty and gambling. The lottery. Most people who buy the lottery in this country, state lotteries, are poor and working class people. Who spend tons of money buying lottery tickets on the hope that they will strike it big because they can't make it in American society otherwise. And these gambling and these in slots appeals to that same core of people in our society, which is a huge number of people. And when you tack younger people onto that, then you're talking about people who are already induced to the world of that kind of gaming. Because their life is video games and are pulled even more into this world. I mean, what I'm saying is that it seems to me that sometimes I think maybe we ask the question the wrong way and we get so hung up on who's addicted, becomes a problem gambler and loses their home, when the issue is that people do get addicted to gaming and gambling from other definitions and spend too much of their lives in that world.
Well, that would be true of all addictions. But the thing that we really need to remember is all addictions are rooted in troubled relationships, and typically that starts in the home. So it's not just gamblers. You know, it can be across the board with addictions and those people who don't become addicted. The other thing is the critical life events that people want to escape from, the emotional, the physical trauma. And we certainly see that in early childhood and then again in adulthood with our action gamblers or casino gamblers. And we see it in adulthood with our slot machine gamblers, the slot machine gamblers being more of the escapist type who don't seem to have those early life traumas. Now, the Center for Responsible Gaming, Christine, has done some marvelous research. I wish they would do more and in a different direction.
Christina, what are your thoughts?
Well, we've actually done a lot in all areas. We've done work on prevalence. We're funding a lot of treatment outcome studies to figure out how to help clinicians decide how to treat the disorder because there's really no treatment standard. We have focused a lot on I'm glad you mentioned youth, Mark, because young men are probably the group that's at highest risk. We find a much higher rate of problems among young men and college age men, mainly. And I do think that's why we have put a lot of our resources into looking at youth and college gambling. And that's a tough population because they don't show up for treatment at all. So what you really need to do is figure out what kinds of interventions. For example, right now we're funding an intervention that will be online on our collegegambling.org website for college students that are having problems with gambling. And they can go to it anonymously and get a confidential feedback from this online intervention. And so I do think that we're trying, you know, in terms of our research dollars, we're trying to reach out to all of the critical areas to help treatment providers and then to also help populations that might be at higher risk and also prevention. I mean, I think it's really important that we think about ways to prevent people from getting into trouble in the first place, which is why we do a lot in responsible gaming. We really encourage gaming operators to use science-based responsible gaming programs so that someone who might just be on the verge of developing a problem might be helped by that.
So I wonder if both of you think that whatever state has is gambling, and every state in the world seems to be will have gambling now and gaming at some level, whether that percentage of those resources should go to dealing with this issue, which doesn't seem to be happening in many places.
Yes, I do think that money, and I think you have a lot of good models in the United States. For example, in Iowa, a lot of the money earned from the casinos goes into treatment, and they have an extensive treatment network in Iowa. I do think that it can make a big difference, and I do think that we should expect the gaming operators to do any kind of responsible gaming they can do and to support treatment centers and to do, you know, there are a variety of ways that you can really support people on this issue.
Valerie, before we have to break?
Well, Christine mentioned doing research and outcome studies from treatment providers. My problem is there aren't many treatment providers in the country. Certainly there are some who do outpatient care, but what about inpatient? What about residential care? What about what we see in alcohol and drugs, the 28 or 4 to 6 week rehabs? I think
Valerie's right. We do have a shortage of clinicians, so that's why NCRG is trying to do treatment provider workshops and help the drug and alcohol counselors, of which there are many,
yes,
to get up to speed on gambling so they can take on clients with gambling problems as well. That's been a major initiative of ours this year.
So we have been talking to Christine Wiley, Senior Research Director of the National Center for Responsible Gaming, and Dr. Valerie Lorenz, a clinical counselor who works with compulsive gambling, is writing 3 books on it. It is part of our ongoing discussion here as Maryland wrestles with whether or not to expand gaming in the state of Maryland and how to expand it. I want to thank both Christine and Valerie for joining us, and we look forward to continuing our conversations.
Thank you. Good talking with you, Christine.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care. We're going to take a brief break, come back, go to traffic, and when we finish traffic, we are going to talk about the articles in the Sun this morning about a family being evicted from housing and over the federal rule that if someone in your home commits a crime, then you can lose your home if you're in subsidized housing. So we'll wrestle with that with our guests, so stay with us. Don't go away.